स्वभावजनितैर्वपुषस्य दोषैर्न प्राकृतत्वमिह भुक्तजनस्य पश्येद् गङ्गाम्भसां न खलु बुड्बुडफैनपङ्कैर्ब्रह्मद्रवत्वमपि गोच्यत नीरधर्मये दृष्टये Seen by ordinary vision, relation, being situated in his original Krishna conscious position, a pure devotee does not identify with the body. Such a devotee should not be seen from a materialistic point of view. Indeed, one should overlook a devotee's having a body born in a low family, a body with a bad complexion, a deformed body, or a diseased or infirm body. According to ordinary vision, such imperfections may seem prominent in the body of a pure devotee. But despite such seeming defects, the body of a pure devotee cannot be polluted. It is exactly like the waters of the Ganges, which sometimes during the rainy season are full of bubbles, foam, and mud. The Ganges waters do not become polluted. Those who are advanced in spiritual understanding will bathe in the Ganges without considering the condition of the water. I'm sure that we can follow the previous verse. This verse is given. In other words, that we should offer respect to all devotees. That was which verse number 5 was discussing, how we should mentally respect the Kanishtha Adhikari and then offer our pranam to the Madhyam and offer all and service and hearing to the Uttam Adhikari. So that we can develop a respectful attitude toward all devotees. Rupa Goswami is reminding us or warning us that we should not see devotees in a materialistic way. Drishtair svabhava janitair vapushosh doshaya. Don't see faults in the body, he says, in the material nature of the devotee. All devotees, they have a material body in this world, made out of earth, water, fire, air, and ether. And but the devotee, he is not of this world. He is transcendental. So the nature that he is encased within, maybe having some material side effects or material qualities, but this has nothing to do with the devotee himself. It's only his body. Trishtvair svabhava janater vapusha shodosha na prakritatvam iha bhakta janasya pashyat. So a devotee should not see any devotee in a materialistic way. But in particular, this verse is giving warning against seeing the Uttam Adhikari in a material way. Because Prabhupada adds, due to the commentaries, being situated in his original Krishna conscious position. This is the pure devotee, the person who is the Uttam Adhikari. This pure devotee does not identify with the body. But actually we shouldn't see any devotee in a material way and judge him or slander him or criticize him or laugh at him or see ourselves as superior to him because of his material conditioning or from his place of birth or his body may be very big. Maybe he's little fat or he has bad complexion or he may be very old. He may have some other types of idiosyncrasies due to his upbringing or his birth in this material world. He may have speech impediment. He may speak harshly. He may sometimes get angry. But we shouldn't judge the devotee in this way. We should look at his devotional service and his long record of devotional service, how steady he is, and how he's helping to spread Krishna consciousness, and how he's trying to help people to become Krishna conscious in different ways. This requires little philosophical intelligence and discrimination, because there's a great tendency to see in a material way, because we've been seeing in this way for so many lifetimes. And there's also a tendency to try to pose oneself as superior, because if you see some fault in someone, then it makes you feel a little bit better. That's why everyone likes to find faults in everyone else, because it boosts your ego artificially up a few notches. You know, you say, oh, here's another person that I'm a little bit better than. So the conditioned soul, including the Vaishnava sadhaka, he has a tendency to try to find fault with others, even the other Vaishnavas. Or maybe sometimes we could say especially the other Vaishnavas, because he's living with them every day, he's dealing with them, working with them, and he sees all of the faults. So it's not so easy to transcend this, as probably most of you have realized after 10 or 15 or maybe more years of practicing Krishna consciousness. So this is a warning. So we can give up probably the most popular of all the anarthas, which is sadhu-ninda. So this verse represents anartha-nivritti. Bhaktivinoda Thakur describes in Harinam Chintamani and also in Bhajan Rahasya that there are, in Harinam Chintamani he says there's three causes for anarthas, and in Bhajan Rahasya he adds one more. So you can say there's four causes or categories of anarthas. The first one is called asat trishna, which means material thirst, hankering for something material. And of those, there are four kinds. My little notes here. Hankering for things in this life. Hankering for things in the next life. Hankering for cities. No, that doesn't mean New York City or Mexico City, but cities, mystic perfections. Hankering for music on a flat disc. And what's the last one? Liberation. These are the hankerings. So if we have these types of things in our consciousness, then we are subject to anarthas called asat-trishna, anartha. Anything which is something other than Krishna. Then the next group is called Hridaya Dorbalya. Hridaya Dorbalya, which means weakness of the heart. This is also found in Bhagavad Gita, chapter 2, which you have already studied. Can anybody quote the verse? Any Bhagavad Gita pandits? Ridarya Dobalya. When Krishna, Arjuna's verse, he says, I cannot follow, I need some help, because I am overwhelmed by this weakness of heart, now I become your disciple. Huh? Krishna is saying that, this is your weakness of heart, Arjuna. Right? Thank you. And so, Bhaktivinoda Thakur mentioned there's four kinds of these. One is trivial things. Trivial, anything small and silly or useless. But somehow a person has become absorbed in this. Just like there's one devotee that I know, an advanced devotee, but somehow he's become totally absorbed in cricket matches. He knows all the teams and all from all the countries. He knows all the players' names on each team. And he knows who's winning and who's in second and third place. And he knows all of the batting averages of every single player on every team. He's into it. Now, it's not very sinful to do this, but somehow it's a weakness of heart. And he admits it. Yes, this is my vice. Yeah, this is a trivial attachment. Next thing is more serious, envy. And then deceit. And then desire for fame or position. These are more serious ones, all of them. And they come about when a person is spiritually weak. It's a condition of the mind or heart. When a person is in a spiritually weak condition, then he becomes weak in heart and he becomes absorbed in one of these four things. Then the next thing is called aparad. And we'll enumerate that. We'll skip to the fourth one. We'll enumerate that one in a moment because we'll save that the best for last. And then the fourth one is called tattva vibrahma, which means having some philosophical misconception. Tattva vibrahma. And of those, there are also four kinds. Swa, tattva vibrahma, which means misconception about the self. Paratattva vibrahma, which means misconception about the Lord. Paratattva. Then the third one is called sadhya sadhan vibrahma, tattva vibrahma, which means having a misconception about the practice or the goal. Sadhya sadhan tattva vibrahma. Sadhya sadhan. D-H-A-D-H-Y-A. Sadhya sadhan tattva vibrahma. Sadhya means the goal and sadhan means practice. Sadhya sadhan tattva vibrahma. Sadhya means the goal and sadhan means practice. So it means you have a misconception about the practice or the goal of Krishna consciousness. And then the last one is called Virodhi Vishaya Vibrahma. Virodhi Vishaya. It means to have some illusion of, or misconception about which things are unfavorable to the practice of Krishna consciousness. In other words, if you think that let's try to think of something. The best. We're saving the best for last. So of aparad, there's also four kinds. Vaishnava aparad, nam aparad, seva aparad, and, well, I guess you can call it jiva aparad, sometimes called chitkana or bhuta aparad. Did you get all of those? Vaishnav, nam, seva, and jiva. Which one? So, anyway, the point is that the aparads of all of these offenses, of all of these anarthas, the most serious ones are coming from the ones which are most intense and difficult to get rid of are the offenses. Although the other ones can be also serious. But Vaishnava aparad and nam aparad, these ones particularly, are very serious. And so Rupa Goswami is warning in this verse that in order to progress past all of the anarthas, one has to be particularly careful about offending Vaishnavas. One is just called pure devotional service. And Prabhupada again discusses Shuddha Bhakti as the activity of the soul proper, as he was describing it in text 3 in the commentary, quoting Anyabhilashita Shunyam, which was defining pure devotion. Now he's saying that it's actually this activity of pure devotion is performed in a liberated condition. So someone who's performing this pure devotional service is liberated from his material conditioning and is transcendental to the material characteristics and qualities that may be surrounding him and may be found present within his body and bodily expressions, let's say it that way. He again quotes from the Anyabhilashita Shunyam Shloka in the commentary and says that Bhakti Yoga is the proper activity of the soul, and when one actually engages in unalloyed, uncontaminated devotional service, he is already liberated. Krishna's devotee is not subjected to material condition, even though his bodily features may appear materially conditioned. One should therefore not see a pure devotee from a materialistic point of view. Unless one is actually a devotee, he cannot see another devotee perfectly. As explained in the previous verse, there are three types of devotees: Kanishtha, Madhyam, and Uttam. The Kanishtha Adhikari cannot distinguish between a devotee and non-devotee. He is simply concerned with worshipping the deity in the temple. A Madhyam Adhikari, however, can distinguish between the devotee and non-devotee, as well as between the devotee and the Lord. Thus he treats the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the devotee, and the non-devotee in different ways. It's from Gita. Apichet sudaracharo bhajate mam ananya bhak sadur eva. Even if a devotee sometimes seems to engage in abominable activities, he should be considered a sadhu, because his actual identity is that of one engaged in the loving service of the Lord. In other words, he is not to be considered an ordinary human being. What's also interesting, there's many different views and commentaries on Abhichet Shloka of the Gita, which we'll get to in detail, I guess, when we do the Gita itself. But suffice it to say for now that even if one performs a sinful activity, if he's determined to serve Krishna, then even that sinful act should be overlooked. So what to speak of some material bodily defect of a person, such as a person wearing glasses or, you know, having a strange complexion or bad complexion or being a little fat or something like this. So Swami is trying to stretch our vision beyond the just the externals, so that the reader can, or the devotee can, practice seeing on the spiritual platform. Because in order to advance on the platform of bhakti, one has to actually be able to see beyond these temporary, material, karmic characteristics, which mundane people are totally absorbed in, and they can't go beyond these things whatsoever. Mundane people, they judge each other completely on how what type of clothing they were wearing, or what kind of watch you have, or what kind of shoes you wear. You know, if you go to New York or Paris or a very materialistic place, maybe like Los Angeles or something, and you kind of mix with business class people, and they're very, they seem very developed in many ways. But actually they are all functioning on this level, totally on the external level. And anyway, everyone knows quite well in the material world, people see everyone and judge each other totally on this platform. But it's not such an easy thing to shake off, even having joined the Hare Krishna movement for 5 or 10 years. There's still this tendency towards judging and seeing people. Just like some of you might have experienced when we had our Sadhu Sangha exchange workshop, you know, we expressed our honest impressions of one another, and some of you might have gotten some realizations about that, this type of thing. Sometimes we are surprised when devotees start to see good things in us, perhaps that we didn't even know we thought we had, and then we were thinking that they were seeing us in the material way, but actually they're not, which is sometimes the case. Happens, it's very good because it's very encouraging. It gives us a little faith in God and devotees. But the point here is to try to develop some humility and some depth of vision. Rupa Goswami gives the example of the Ganges having foam, bubbles, and mud. But the people nonetheless bathe in it, and they use it for drinking. Even sometimes you can see, you know, a corpse floating in the Ganges or Jamuna. Once I was here in the Jamuna and I was bathing, and I saw this corpse floating by, what I thought was a corpse, you know, a dead body was floating by without moving. And it was all the way from here, all, and it was maybe 10, 15 minutes completely. And then suddenly the guy just got up and started swimming. like this. I thought it was a dead body. But sometimes there are dead bodies in the Jamuna and in the Ganges. But it doesn't stop people from bathing in it or bowing down to the waters. Once a devotee, probably right in this room, he made an example of ISKCON is just like the Ganges also. And it sometimes has lots of foam and bubble and mud floating in it in the form of politics, fall downs of leaders, sometimes materialistic propensities brought in from our own backgrounds and natures, envy, whatever, fighting. But nonetheless, the Ganges or ISKCON is still going on, and one should take shelter of it and not be disturbed by these things. So the pure devotee is also like that. And we should, as Rupa Goswami points out, not give importance to these defects. So in order to transcend all of these anarthas, humility is important. And one has to have the proper vision. So Rupa Goswami is giving us this in this verse. In Brihad Bhagavatamrita, when Narada Muni meets Gopakumara in Vaikuntha, he speaks one verse to him, and he says, Paripakyena Dainyasya Premajasham Vitanyate Tayor Mito Tayor. What is it? Oparaspayam Tayoritam Karya Karina Tekshate. It says that Paripakyena Dainyasya, that mature humility is the cause of prema, and that the two can be seen together as cause and effect. Humility, mature humility. Paripak means mature. Dainya means humility. So paripakena dainyasya premajasram vitanyate. Humility can bring prema. If it's true humility. Therefore, Mahaprabhu said, Chunarapi Sunichena. And Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur says, this is our bhajan pranali, or siddha pranali, mantra, for the Gaudiya Vaishnava. So we will attain all perfection just by simply developing humility and seeing past others' faults is an important component of humility. Because unless you can learn to see past others' faults, you will not enter into the ocean of humility. It will stop you from entering deep into that ocean. But in the next section, describes the true Goswami. And he says that he talks about the Goswami title here in Vrindavan. There are so many Goswamis. And there were, and probably still are, quite a few people who discriminate against Vaishnavas who are coming from non-Goswami families and also, what to speak of, Western countries. Prabhupada says, he said, one should not think, here's an American Goswami, and discriminate against him. Nor should one think, here is a Nityananda Vamsa Goswami. And he says, there is an undercurrent of protest against our awarding the title Goswami to the American Vaishnavas. Some people flatly tell the American devotees that their sannyas title of Goswami is not bona fide. However, according to the statements of Rupa Goswami in this verse, an American Goswami, or Russian Goswami, or German Goswami, is still a Goswami, and they are none different from Goswamis in the family of Acharyas, if they're factually qualified. So, this is a real big thing, because Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he fought vehemently for years against this smart Goswami mentality here in Vrindavan and in Navadvip. And Prabhupada also had to fight against this. In Navadvip, during the first Gauramandala Parikrama, when Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur was bringing his parikrama through Navadvip, all of the mahants, they wanted to charge tax. They were charging tax to all of the pilgrims that were coming through Navadvip, through the main street. But Srila Saraswati Thakur told his group, don't give them even one paisa. So they came through with a big group of over 1,000 people, and they didn't pay the fine or the tax, whatever. And so the local mahants, who are smartas or jati gosais, they hired some gundas, and they planned to attack the parikrama party. So they put some men on the roof with bricks, and they had some men on the ground with sticks. And then when the big parikrama came through the main street, they started throwing bricks on them, and then the men started attacking them with sticks, and there was a big, you know, riot right in the middle of the town. This, the mahants thought that they could squelch Srila Saraswati Thakur's revolution against their power monopoly. But their attempt had the opposite effect, because when the Navadvip Dambasis saw that the mahants, you know, were behind the attack of a Harinam party of pilgrims with bricks and all of these things, then they lost faith in the leaders of the Vaishnav temples. They lost faith in these Jati Gosai people, and Srila Saraswati Thakur's party reigned supreme. And basically, from that time onwards, the people lost faith in them, and so they just took the air out of their whole party, their whole presentation. Unfortunately, after that, because they didn't, their faith perhaps was not rekindled by Gaudiya Vaishnavas, so a lot of them became involved with upper sampradayas, which is a unfortunate phenomenon in history. But still, the main party, Jati Gosais, they lost their power, and Saraswati Thakur's Gaudiya Vaishnavas became very much appreciated by the people. Now, Srila Prabhupada had to deal with this also here in Vrindavan. Once a few sannyasis went to some of the local temples, and one of the pujaris said, oh, you boys are very nice. You're doing very nice seva, chanting, coming here to Vrindavan, and if you're lucky, in your next life, you'll take birth here in Vrindavan, in the Goswami family, and become a pujari. So the sannyasi said, thank you. And they went back to Prabhupada's room, and they told Prabhupada the story. Prabhupada said, no, he said, you should have told them, this pujari, that if you are lucky, my dear pujari, in your next life, you will take birth in America and become a Sankirtan devotee in ISKCON. Something like this. So, I know there's a lot of other kinds of stories like this. Of course, Prabhupada, he did recognize the traditions in Vrindavan as far as the Goswamis and the Brahmins, because he invited them to come and perform their rituals for the installation of Krishna Balaram and Radha Shyamasundar and Gornitai. However, he said to the devotees, you know, aside, he said, the real installation was done by chanting Hare Krishna, because we were doing kirtan that time. And he said these rituals, not so important. The kirtan was the thing that really installed the deities. More perhaps interesting, or maybe not so interesting to you, but more contemporary, to see Goswamis just on the bodily platform has been going on for a long time in India, even as far back in the Madhva line, and probably even before then, but I don't have a Gita, but there was one famous... Does anyone have a Gita with them? The Tirtha, a disciple of, well, in the Madhva line. He was a kind of revolutionary within the Madhva Sampradaya. He was one of the first to ever initiate someone from the Shudra caste. And his name was Konaka. And this devotee used to sit outside of the Udupi temple and just play on his ektar and chant some bhajans and cry in ecstasy. And the people, they would sometimes give him a little donation on the way in. But he was not allowed to enter the temple. So he would just sit outside, something like Haridas Thakur in Puri. He would just sit outside and just chant all day, because he was a Shudra. But Vyasatirtha initiated him. One day, a very strange thing happened. The whole earth started shaking, and the whole temple shook. And there was a crack in the wall and a big hole. Some of the bricks and or part of the wall broke, and there was a big gaping hole in the temple wall. And it just so happened that the hole was just in a place where Konaka could actually see the deity. Because of the movements and the wall breaking, you know, naturally all the pujaris became very worried for the deity at that time, so they all came running to the altar to make sure the deity was safe. And when all of the pujaris were on the altar, and the wall broke, and then there was this clear vision. They could all see Konaka sitting out there playing on this ektar. Then even a more strange thing happened, and then the deity actually shifted and just moved and faced where the hole was. made like a 80 degree turn on this, like this. And then they were completely flabbergasted when they saw that. And then they started to actually accept that Konika was a special devotee after that happened. No, actually, in all the sampradayas, there are examples. Just like in the Sri Sampradaya, you have the famous Kanchipurna, who Ramanuja wanted to take initiation from this man, who is from the Shudra caste also. And when asked by Ramanuja, Kanchipurna just left town because he was too embarrassed. He was he thought that you're a great pandit from a high Brahmin family. How is it you're going to take initiation from me, a Shudra? It's crazy. So he left Kanchipurnam and he left for 1 year and then he came back just to avoid this. But this Kanchipurna, he would bring every day water for the deity, Varadraj. And sometimes the local people, they would see him speaking to nobody, as I thought. Sometimes they would have a conversation, he would just turn and start speaking as if someone was there, but they wouldn't see anybody. And most of the Brahmins, they thought he was crazy. But gradually they began to realize that he was a Mahabhagavat, that he was actually having darshan of Krishna. And now they made a little place for him to, not on the altar, but they made a little place for him to actually fan the deity with a chamara. But in the beginning, most people thought he was crazy. And so we have Haridas Thakur, we have so many Vaishnavas. Even Rupa Sanatan, as we said, although they were from Brahmin families, they had taken the occupation under the Noab and had fallen to such a low position, but they were accepted because of their qualification. So nowadays, in more recent times, we had one devotee was actually a man that joined the ISKCON here in this temple. He was a chokidar actually for some time here. And then gradually he was influenced, became a devotee, joined the ashram, was initiated by Prabhupada. Then he became a sannyasi, started traveling and preaching. Wrote some books now, one on Ekadasi and some other books like this. And he has a kind of a typical type of, I guess you could say, offensive mentality or offensive philosophy. He says that all the GBC are Jews and they should not be trusted. And all of the GBC are a bunch of Jews and they should not be trusted, and they misjudged me in my case because he had a certain things that he did. They were judged by a group of devotees. The GBC asked him to give up his sannyas position, wear white and get married, because he was found in different places with different women and so forth. But he completely denied this, and so he started traveling in America, in New York in particular, I know, because I was there at the time, and he was preaching like this to the Indian congregation of the Brooklyn Temple. said, so they all judge me wrong because they're all prejudiced. But you know that I'm Indian man, and I, you know, you should follow me. These people are all no good. And he twists a lot of quotes from Jiva Goswami and the Sandarbhas and other Shastras to try to support his fanatical and offensive view. And it's obviously suffering from deep-rooted envy and aparad. And he's even written papers like this, describing how Krishna consciousness can only be propagated by someone from Goswami family, from a Brahmin family, Indian family, and all others are bogus. They cannot give initiation. They cannot teach Shastra. They cannot worship Shalagram Shila and all of these things. And they takes different quotes out of context and from Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur and Jiva Goswami, different quotes like this. I recently saw one book he wrote also, another book, with the same things all kind of riveted to, actually it was a cookbook, but it had all of these things kind of in between, you know, like in the introduction and the end, and like this, all of these kind of nuances were there. So these things still go on today. But the famous verse, Arche Vishnav Shiladir Guru Shu Naramati Vaishnave Jati Budhi, that one should not see the Archavigraha of Vishnu simply as a stone. One should not see the Vaishnava as an ordinary man. All of these things, because such a person, he has jati buddhi, he has a caste consciousness, he has a hellish consciousness. Everybody should be judged according to their quality and their realization. So that's the middle section of this commentary. Then the last section, what do I call it? Samadhikari. Starting from where it says, if we consider the bodily defects of a Vaishnava, we should understand we're committing an offense at the lotus feet of the Vaishnava. This is called Hatimata. Yes, so this is the beginning of the last section there. Prabhupada expresses his own feelings in regards to his own godbrothers in this regard. He says, those who think that Krishna consciousness is limited to a certain section of people or a certain section of devotees or a certain tract of land are generally prone to see the external features of the devotee. Such neophytes, unable to appreciate the exalted service of the advanced devotee, try to bring the Mahabhagavat to their platform. We experience such difficulty, or he could say, I experience such difficulty, in propagating this Krishna consciousness all over the world. Unfortunately, we are surrounded by neophyte godbrothers who do not appreciate the extraordinary activities of spreading Krishna consciousness all over the world. They simply try to bring us to their platform and they try to criticize us in every respect. We very much regret their naive activities and poor fund of knowledge. Pretty strong statements, yeah, by Prabhupada. Yeah. Prabhupada once said that how did he put it? Very funny statement. Something like, if it would have helped me, if passing air would have helped me, they would have held it in. Talking about his godbrother. Then when Prabhupada tried to get land in Navadvipa for ISKCON, also his god brothers there, they tried to block him from purchasing the original plot of land by paying money to the local magistrates to block the sale. Like, this actually happened. They didn't want ISKCON to come in, most of these other groups, his god brothers. And they criticized Prabhupada himself. Oh, you're doing so many bad things. You've given diksha, to all of these malechas, and you're also doing this with women, and women coming, living in the temples, and giving them Gayatri and so many things. And your disciples, they call you Prabhupada. And Prabhupada took out his letterhead quickly and showed him, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami. He showed him the letterhead. Doesn't say Prabhupada. See. But his god brothers, they very much criticized him for all little things. But Prabhupada had spread Krishna consciousness in so many places all around the world. And in order to do that, he must have been empowered. So instead of seeing that, they were just seeing some small details, some faults here, some faults there. You didn't do like this, you didn't do like we do. So in this way they criticized him. So that's why Prabhupada discusses this here in the last paragraph. When one criticizes a pure devotee commits aparad, and that's obstructive and dangerous for those who desire to advance. A person cannot derive any benefit when he offends the lotus feet of a Vaishnava. Everyone should therefore be very careful not to be jealous of an empowered Vaishnava. It's also an offense to consider an empowered Vaishnava an object of disciplinary action. It's an offense to try to give him advice or to correct him. One can distinguish between a neophyte and advanced Vaishnava by their activities. The advanced Vaishnava is always situated as the spiritual master, and the neophyte is always considered his disciple. The spiritual master must not be subject to the advice of a disciple, nor should the spiritual master be obliged to take instructions from those who are not his disciples. Are there any questions? Well, it depends on the circumstance. But, running an ashram is different from, judging. In other words, criticizing a person or judging him harshly because of some material condition. He may, because of some practical reasons, have to make some practical judgments based upon, these types of external considerations. But it's not that he will hate the person or envy him or tell him not to chant Hare Krishna, right? We'll always tell the person, yes, chant Hare Krishna, study these books. And, some kind Vaishnavas will come and visit them in the home. Why not? But they may not everyone may be allowed to live in the ashram. If a person has some defect mentally or physically, then, we're not like set up as a hospital or some kind of social some kind of psychological wing of a hospital or something like this. But in, some other places, he may be accepted. But it depends on the local discrimination and the local policies of the particular managers. or not want their, that soul to become Krishna conscious. Even to an animal they'll give prasadam to, right? So there's a difference between those two things. Being practically running our movement. Just like I was in London for so many years, and a lot of drunks would come into the temple. Not a lot, but sometimes they would come. Guys that, haven't bathed for 4 or 5 days, living in the street, when they come in to take their shoes off, it was like, can knock you right over. So, some of the guests, they would try to be tolerant, but the smell was so bad, so we'd have to tell, pull the person aside and say, excuse me, you'll have to go and take some bath somewhere and then come back. You're not clean enough. People are complaining and it's not nice. Please. Like this. Or if the person was drunk, we just have to ask him to just go away and come back. I had to do that personally many times to people. It wasn't easy. But there's a different thing, though. Something more, yes. And offend them. There's no contradiction in seeing the reality. Just by observation, there's no offense. Is there? If I have the vision to see something that you're doing which is not beneficial for your own Krishna consciousness, it doesn't affect me, and it's not an offense to you, just because I am intelligent enough to see that defect. Whether I dwell on that, and whether I, degrade you, or whatever, see myself as superior to you because of that, that's a different thing. Just like, I'm trying to give some example. I can't think, but in other words, you may see the reality of a situation, but you may think that you may dwell on the person's good fault, the good qualities, that, he's very steady, he's chanting every day, he's very fixed, he's loyal to Prabhupada, to his spiritual master. He's very enthusiastic, but he's doing some seva in, Tamagun or in Rajagun. But that's his conditioning at this time in his life. And, in 5 years, he'll be in a different stage. So why should I think myself superior to him? I see that I have a lot of ignorance in myself. You may see other people's faults, but you also see their good qualities. And you may have some good qualities, but you focus on your own faults, and you see the good qualities in the others. Though you may also see the fault, but you don't focus on that. You don't emphasize that. You don't stress that. It's a matter of emphasis, where you put your emphasis, where you put the importance. It doesn't mean that we are just all naive, blind people, that we're just running around, oh yes, everyone's pure, everyone's an angel, how wonderful it is. No, we're not so foolish. We should use our discrimination, but we shouldn't misuse our discrimination. Okay? If you get the meaning. Bhaktivinoda Thakur doesn't give great details about this. He does say, though, that it is an offense, but to offend a Vaishnava is 1,000 times more serious. That's what I do remember him saying about it. It can mean so many things. Killing an animal, somehow causing violence to another person, unnecessary distress, even to the person's a non-devotee. I saw a temple president come here in Vrindavan some years ago, and he had an argument with a rickshaw wala over a few rupees, and he gave him, you know, the backhand in the face. The rickshaw wala smacked him right in the face, really hard. And he had serious fall down after that, immediately. And of course, a Brijabasi is not just a jiva, he's special. He's a very special person. But anyone, actually, anyone we offend, we may have some difficulty. So it just means we have to be humble to all living entities, as far as humanly possible.
Yes. For the mosquitoes.
Srila Prabhupada ki.